Hello, this is Alton Banks from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Now from today's Triangle Business Journal. Our first article is Citrix Execs Point to Raleigh Ops for SaaS Revenues. As Citrix, the NASDAQ symbol is CTXS, strategizes, its Raleigh workforce continues to drive numbers for the Florida firm. Software as a service, also known as SaaS, software as a service revenue was up 27% year-over-year at $42 million for the quarter. And the bulk, according to what new Chief Financial Officer Mark Coyle told analysts on a conference call, came from ShareFile, which is headquartered in downtown Raleigh. ShareFile execs said repeatedly, helps give Citrix a competitive edge. Citrix had more than 1,100 competitive wins in core areas, according to CEO David Henshaw. Overall, we're also seeing several big desktop replacements, including one of the large medical foundations, a major hospital system, and a large services company, driven by the advanced performance quality of our solutions and the unique Citrix-only capabilities like integration with ShareFile to deliver a complete workspace solution, Henshaw says, adding that business is strong. Now, competition is fierce. There's almost never a transaction over a couple hundred thousand dollars that isn't a head-to-head bake-off with some other competitor, he says. We're not going to win on price. It's not a long-term strategy. We're going to win on integrations and features and performance. Profitability is pressured by the industry's transition to cloud computing, he notes. We're working hard to align the entire company toward a multi-year cloud transformation, he says. Citrix is working on a 2020 plan, which will include details about the pace at which it plans to shift to a subscription-based model, he tells investors. The company has already made major changes in 2017. Jesse Lipson, longtime site lead and CEO of ShareFile, whose acquisition brought Citrix to Raleigh, left his position earlier this year. And changes have hit the firm as a whole, too. Citrix appointed Henshaw, COO and CFO since 2003, as CEO in July. The company started the year by splitting from its go-to business, which combined with Boston firm LogMeIn in a reverse Morris Trust transaction. Following the split, LogMeIn signed a lease for 17,000 square feet of space in downtown Raleigh. Even as it strategizes, Citrix has been expanding in Raleigh. The Florida company announced in December that it would be adding 400 jobs to its local operation. By the end of the year, Citrix had about 800 in Raleigh. Overall, Citrix, which offers software that helps remote workers stay connected to their companies, reported revenues from continuing operations was $693 million, compared to $674 million in the same quarter a year ago. Shares were trading relatively flat Friday for about $77. And in business news regarding sports comes the B of A stadium upgrades and most recent $47 million renovation. The Carolina Panthers have completed the fourth round of Bank of America Stadium renovations, spending $47 million to upgrade one club level and the main ground level concourse. The project also included the addition of several private club areas, including four enclosed terraces in an area that used to be open space on the 300 club level. It can seat up to 28 people and will be sold with permanent seat licenses. The renovations are part of an ongoing effort by the Panthers to satisfy fans' growing expectations for stadium amenities and to create new avenues for generating revenue. In 2013, the city agreed to allocate $87.5 million of tourism tax revenue for the project in exchange for a 10-year commitment from team owner Jerry Richardson. The city's contribution to the latest upgrades was $17 million. This is the fourth consecutive year of renovations in the $170 million five-year plan. Paul Scott, director of B of A Stadium Operations, said every renovated area of the stadium has been tied to the fan-facing experience. The stadium had positive feedback on quicker concession lines and overall experience after last year's renovations on the 500 club level, Scott said. Then you lay out on the 300 Club level a sleek, centered on the Panthers team colors, with increased points of sales and more advanced concessions. Scott said one of the biggest complaints they received from fans previously was the lack of seating. More seating was added for club members to watch the game in an air-conditioned area. The renovation scheme for the 300 Club level had an emphasis on the in-bowl experience through the addition of 4 large-screen LED screens, digital menu boards, and added seating. The large-screen LEDs will transmit exactly what is happening on game day. The other TVs will provide the network feed. Our fans will be able to get 2 different perspectives of the game, Scott said. They'll see different viewing angles and probably get different replays. A small project on the 400 Club level added a bar and seating area overlooking the 300 level. The team also spent $800,000 on the first complete replacement of the irrigation system since 1995. The 100 level was renovated with new signage, added standing tables, and a new craft beer section. Scott said they are generally removing portable vending stations on the 100 level. 12 large banners have been hung around the stadium celebrating significant events in Panthers history. The team is also building a technology facility on the corner of South Mint and Westmoreland Street across from the Doghouse. It replaces the technology center now housed on the stadium's 500 level. As demand for data continues to grow, we've got to stay ahead of the game, and we have built a building over there that should last us into the foreseeable future. Looking ahead, the ticket box area is the next phase for stadium renovations during the off-season of 2018. And in the retail column for today's Triangle Business Journal, hot retailers include both Bricks and Clicks. The Hot 100 Retailers list includes both bricks and mortar and online companies. Subscription meal kit company Blue Apron, which has delivered more than 150 million meals since it was founded 5 years ago, is number 1 on the Hot 100 Retailers list. The list appears in the August issue of the National Retail Federation's Stores magazine and was compiled by research firm Kantar Retail. It's based on sales growth in 2016 over 2015. And ranks both public and privately held retail companies by U.S. domestic sales with a $300 million threshold for inclusion, according to NRF. Blue Apron saw annual sales grow 133% to $795.4 million in 2016, according to the list. In second place is Wayfair, the online furniture and home decor company, where sales grew 54% to $2.9 billion. Third is the Ascena Retail Group. It's the parent company of Ann Taylor, Catherine's, Dress Barn, Lane Bryant, and Maurice's, which had 50% sales growth at $7 billion. Now, rounding out the top 10 at number 4 is the online pet food seller Chewy.com with 48% growth to $900 million. Number 5 is the online building supply company Build.com/Wolseley, which grew 38% to $911 million. Number 6 on the list, convenience store operator CST Brands. That's up 29% at $2.1 billion. Number 7 is subscription fashion retailer Just Fab, up 29% at $572 million. Number 8 is supermarket and department store chain Grupo Comercial Chedraui, up 27% at $1.5 billion. 9 is the supermarket chain Gelson's Markets. It's up 26% at $723 million. And finally, number 10 is Amazon.com, up 25% at $77 billion. Online companies took 6 of the top 10 spots. But most retailers on the Hot 100 list are either traditional retailers or retailers that sell both in-store and online per NRF. What matters most to consumers is a retailer differentiating itself in the marketplace, being innovative with merchandise, and offering the right value to the right person, not whether a retailer is a Bricks or Clicks, said Stores media editor Susan Rita in a prepared statement. The mix of both traditional and digital retailers on this list reflects that. The secret to sustained growth going forward is a symbiotic relationship between digital and physical retailing. Now from the Food Friday section. As you may remember, Food Friday is a regular feature from BizWomen, highlighting women making an impact in food-related industries. Kroger is now selling Beyond Meat's vegan burger that smells and looks real to the point that it bleeds when cooked. The Cincinnati Business Courier reported that Kroger added the product to compete with Whole Foods in the natural and organic food business. Whole Foods is Beyond Burger's biggest outlet, with nearly 400 stores carrying the patties. Beyond Meat's burgers are made with a mix of plant-based products, including wheat, potato, and pea proteins, yeast extract, and coconut oil, the Business Courier reported. Beet juice gives the burgers a reddish color, making them look similar to ground beef. Business Insider reported that Beyond Meat's parent company, Impossible Foods, raised a $75 million investment this week from Singapore venture fund Temasek, Bill Gates, Coastal Ventures, and others. The latest round brings the company's total funding to $250 million. And in a winner in food, after a multiple network bidding war, Starz won the rights this week to produce a television series based on the book Sweet Bitter by server-turned-author Stephanie Danler, according to The Hollywood Reporter. Sweet Bitter tells the story of 22-year-old Tess, who moves to New York and lands a job as a server in a prominent downtown restaurant. The Hollywood Reporter described the novel as Kitchen Confidential meets Bridget Jones. Danler wrote the script for the show along with the American screenwriter Stu Zickerman, per The Hollywood Reporter. Brad Pitt's company, Plan B, is expected to produce the show. And in an unhappy ending, Hollis Bullitt, daughter of the founder of Bullitt Whiskey, has accused the company of firing her for being gay, Grub Street reported. In a series of Facebook posts written this week, Bullitt outlines instances of alleged discrimination during her 25 years with the company as brand ambassador. Bullitt said she was pushed out of the company in late December, 1 month after bringing her longtime partner to the family's Thanksgiving dinner. Bullitt said she came out to her family 10 years ago and fought to stay in the company, despite her family essentially disowning her. The distillery's parent company, Diageo, called Bullitt's claims inaccurate and said Bullitt was dismissed after a contract agreement failed to be reached, per Grub Street. And in sad news, the passing of an icon, Judith Jones, the editor who discovered Julia Child and edited scores of culinary and literary writers, died Wednesday, according to the New York Times. Colleagues call Jones an extraordinary editor, a deft wordsmith, and above all, insatiable for the pleasures of French cooking, the Times reported. Jones published Mastering the Art of French Cooking by Julia Child, Louisette Bertholle, and Simone Beck, which put Child on the map as a culinary authority. Jones also discovered and published Anne Frank's diary following World War II. Jones died at the age of 93 from complications of Alzheimer's disease, per the Times. Continuing in the food vein comes the article NC Chef Dishes Up Popular Fried Chicken in National TV Debut. Good Food at Monford. Good Food at Monford executive chef Larry Schreiber prepares his popular fried chicken by brining it and soaking it in buttermilk. A Charlotte chef will offer his spin on fried chicken on national TV next week. Larry Schreiber, executive chef at Good Food on Monford, appears on the inaugural season of FYI Network's The Guide It All Guide 2. The show takes an in-depth look at a food item or ingredient during each episode. In Schreiber's case, chicken takes center stage. He prepares his popular fried chicken dish, which has been on the menu since last fall. It's served with bacon, braised collard greens, and potato salad. The Southern transplant, though he has been in the South nearly two decades, has tried a number of recipes over the years. This one hits the sweet spot for his own taste, as well as his customers. So what's the secret? He brines the chicken thighs overnight, and then soaks them in buttermilk until they are fried. Those steps are key to flavor and moisture, Schreiber says. He offers insight into his recipe and prepares the dish before getting reviews from diners. It's a lot of fun to be a part of the initial run of this show, he says. The episode airs at 10:30 p.m. on Monday. Now the article, Three Reasons That Pay-Per-Click, also known as PPC, Matters for Your Business. PPC can be an incredibly cost-effective way to generate leads through search engines. The key is to look at the right metrics for the right situations and use that data to make the most meaningful changes to your campaigns. There's one thing nearly every potential B2B buyer does before buying a product or signing a contract for your services: search. In fact, 77% of B2B buyers are said to research on Google before making a buying decision. And while improving your organic search engine ranking is important, executing an search engine optimization plan takes time. It's a long game approach that pays long-term dividends. For many businesses, pay-per-click advertising through services like Google AdWords has become an incredibly effective way to leverage the keywords potential customers are using to search for your business or industry. Here are a few reasons why PPC might be an incredibly valuable marketing tactic to increase traffic to your website and generate new leads. 1. You don't have to wait to start generating leads. Because you're paying for them, PPC allows you to get up and running with ads for the keywords you want to rank for pretty quickly. While an organic SEO strategy takes time, PPC allows you to get in the game for important industry keywords. 2. You only pay for what you convert. With PPC campaigns, you only pay for the clicks you generate. This means you're only paying for people who actually click through on the ad and visit the landing page you intended them to visit. 3. You can easily track conversions to measure ROI. By adding conversion pixels to your landing pages, PPC allows you to identify the exact cost per lead of your campaign, which can be a lot more arduous to generate with other marketing tactics. As a result, you're able to continually tweak and optimize your ads to decrease the cost per lead. Now, how do you measure PPC success? The truth is, there are dozens of PPC metrics you can track. So which ones matter most when it comes to reaching your business goals? Rather than focusing solely on PPC analytics like clicks, impressions, and click-through rates, here are some metrics that allow you to analyze macro metrics that speak to the ROI of your efforts. 1. Cost per conversion. This helps you determine if the PPC clicks you're generating represent quality traffic that's actually converting into sales. 2. Most valuable keywords. Being able to track which keywords lead to sales can help you zero in on where to give credit within your PPC campaigns. And 3. The lifetime value of PPC customers. Once you have an understanding of how much it costs to convert a PPC lead, compare that to the other cost per customer marketing tactics against the lifetime value of your customers. At the end of the day, PPC can be an incredibly cost-effective way to generate leads through search engines. The key is to look at the right metrics for the right situations and use that data to make the most meaningful changes to your campaigns. Now here's an article on civility. The article is called Four Ways to De-escalate Conflict with Better Communication. Would you rather be right or effective? Today's headlines are rife with tense conflict. The resolutions, however, should be less about winning or being right, and more about being honest, direct, and respectful in our discourse. When we shift from an approach that is rooted in accusations, blame, and defensiveness to an inquisitive and compassionate mindset, we arrive at a collaborative win-win solution. Consider the value in being right versus being effective. Is being right or winning the argument worth it all at all costs? Or is there greater potential for success for everyone if we are more focused on effective communication? De-escalating a tense situation is a communication skill to be mastered. In today's fiery, strife-filled interactions, here are four ways to de-escalate the situation with better communication. 1. Cultivate genuine compassion. Extend empathy toward the other person and their situation. Find an appreciation for their perspective. Although you may not agree, they're not necessarily wrong either. 2. Be inquisitive. Ask open questions to formulate a clear understanding. Strive to learn not just the what, but also the why. and the how. 3. Listen carefully to understand, not to respond. Do you find yourself interrupting or tuning the other person out to think ahead to what you want to say? Correct the habit. Listen intently to gain a better understanding. Then pause before you offer a response or follow up with an additional question. Aim to walk away with new information that is helpful to a resolution. And finally, 4, speak respectfully. Be wary of corporate speak that is condescending or dismissive. Choose your words carefully and calmly. Offer a response that builds up rather than tears down. Author and activist Anne Lamott is credited with saying, "You can either practice being right or practice being kind." My coaching question has often been, would you rather be right or effective? Perhaps the winning outcome is less about one side or the other being right and entirely about both sides being effective and kind. So we just read about 4 tips for being better communication. Here's an article entitled 7 Tips for Traveling Safely Overseas. If you want to travel, you should. However, it makes sense to take precautions and understand risk. If you are planning a summer or fall vacation, you might be worried about increased terrorism around the globe. Is it safe to travel now? You've heard the rationale before. Terrorists want to disrupt our everyday lives. If they keep you home at a staycation in your backyard, instead of traveling to Europe or a major U.S. city, they've won a victory. So what's the risk? Can you quantify the risk? Sure. Plenty of people have run the numbers. The Washington Post observed you run about the same chances of being crushed by unstable furniture as you are being killed by terrorists. The website lifeinsurancequotes.com, which offers statistics from various federal agencies and nonprofits, reports that your chances of being killed in a shark attack are 1 out of 11.5 million. The chances of being killed in a terrorist attack are 1 in 20 million. You want more? NBC News cited a Cato Institute report showing the chances of an American being killed in an immigrant-initiated terrorist strike at 1 out of 3.64 million. Now, what about surveillance? Years ago, New York City was not considered a safe place. Visitors to the city were reluctant to ride the subways because they were worried about being mugged. This even included daytime when the trains were crowded. I used to explain, "See all these people? They're called witnesses." Today, we have surveillance. You watch NCIS LA. You used to watch Person of Interest. You're used to people saying, "Get the street cam footage." However, the best security is what we don't see. Now, London is an exception. They're proud of their surveillance. In 2013, the Daily Telegraph reported Britain has 1 surveillance camera per 11 people in the country. It's been estimated they have 6 million CCTV cameras. It's been said the average Briton is caught on camera 70 times a day. If you're traveling to London, the number rises to 300 times per day. A leader in a new entertainment concept, in 2015, they developed the TV series Hunted to show how fugitives can be tracked. The U.S. version aired in January of 2017. Surveillance is how the U.K. has been able to roll up terrorist networks, although unfortunately it usually happens after an attack. Now there are some common sense precautions. A simple way to help yourself hopefully avoid accidents and injury while traveling abroad is to stay alert. Start with the obvious. In Australia, India, the U.K., Hong Kong, Indonesia, Ireland, Japan, Singapore, and many Caribbean islands, people drive on the left. Even if you aren't driving, you need to look 3 times before crossing the street. Good news, in London, look left is painted on the pavement. Bad news, for years they've had electric milk delivery trucks that make no sound. Here are 7 additional things to consider. 1, don't dress like a tourist. My wife and I were in Barcelona sipping a Starbucks coffee while watching the 3-card Monty teams set up and play on Las Ramblas, the big pedestrian street. You could tell the tourists from the cruise ships. Some amble slowly, in a daze, wearing ship ID tags on lanyards along with large cameras. Some wore shorts three sizes too large. They must have been catnip to pickpockets. 2. Don't follow people off the street. Someone offers you a cheap watch or a designer handbag. Just follow me down this side street, the person says. This is never a good idea. It's completely out of character, but you need to look straight ahead and ignore them. If you insist on speaking, no thank you is sufficient. 3. Don't walk down dark streets, especially at night. You wouldn't do this at home. So why is it a viable alternative in a strange city? You might be tempted to take a shortcut. Muggings happen in big cities everywhere. 4. Don't exchange money with strangers. Today, you can get local currency from ATMs with no problem. Obviously, you wouldn't buy local currency on the black market. You might get hit with other clever scams like cab drivers who give you change of your large bill with smaller bills, so far so good, but they turn out to be counterfeit. Always have small bills on hand. The hotel can make change for you. 5. Buy medical insurance before you travel. Your health insurance policy back home very well might not fully cover you when abroad. However, it's pretty inexpensive to buy a health insurance policy that covers you while traveling outside the country. Contact your credit card company. 6. Get insurance coverage if you're driving abroad. Here's another instance where coverage stops at the border. Your credit card company should be able to sell you a short-term policy that covers you when driving outside the United States. Earlier, we looked at risk due to terrorism. Your risk of an auto accident is far greater. Based on 2014 numbers from the National Center for Health Statistics, your chances of death in a motor vehicle accident in a given year is 1 out of 9,008. Finally, number 7, gambling with strangers is never a good idea. Years ago, one of the cruise lines we traveled included a warning in the ship's newsletter. Passengers are cautioned not to play cards for high stakes with other passengers aboard the vessel. This even rules out informal games of backgammon in a bar where people say, "Let's make it interesting." You can easily get into trouble. If you want to travel, you should. However, it makes sense to take precautions and understand risk. Now from today's science section comes the article, Teen Pregnancy Prevention Funding Cut. The teen birth rate in the United States has declined steadily over the past 20 years, but is still higher than in other developed countries. The Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, announced that it will end funding for an Obama-era teen pregnancy prevention program 2 years early, with more than 80 organizations losing nearly $214 million in grants. The program, which was planned to last 5 years, provides funding for groups nationwide that focus on helping young women avoid unwanted pregnancy and sexually transmitted infections, Business Insider reported. According to HHS, the teen birth rate in the United States has declined steadily over the past 20 years and was down 51% from 1990 to 2010, but is still higher than other developed countries like Canada and the United Kingdom. In 2014, there were 24.2 births for every 1,000 adolescent females age 15 to 19 in the United States, per HHS, compared with 59.9 births per 1,000 in 1990. And in science news that doesn't relate to teen pregnancy comes Google Glasses. Google has partnered with science curriculum developer Mystery Science to distribute free solar eclipse viewing glasses to community libraries and schools in advance of the August 21st astronomical event. Many of the glasses will be used in conjunction with planned events. 15,000 pairs of eclipse glasses will be shipped directly to schools, and Mystery Science will provide free educational videos and lesson plans about the eclipse at their website. In other science news, we found a new dinosaur. An armored dinosaur whose fossil was accidentally unearthed by an oil worker in Alberta, Canada, 6 years ago has been declared a new species, National Geographic reported. Borealopelta marmechelli was a plant eater that lived in the Cretaceous period. The well-preserved fossil, which was found by a worker digging with heavy equipment in an oil sands field, was unveiled at Alberta's Royal Tyrrell Museum in May. The dinosaur is partially named after the museum technician who dug it out. Boreala pelta Mark Mitchelly translates to Mark Mitchell's Northern Shield. Now, from the technical world comes the article, Cell Phones Isolate Teens, scientist says. Isolation spurred by cell phones makes teens more vulnerable to mental illness, including depression and suicide, according to a professor who studies generational differences. Jean M. Twinge, a professor in psychology at San Diego State University, said members of iGen, those born between 1995 and 2012, also are more immature than their predecessors, Axios reported. The study found that teens are spending less time together and are less likely to date or participate in other typical teen behaviors than previous generations. A study also found that isolation is having an effect on both the homicide and suicide rates among teens. As teens have started spending less time together, they have become less likely to kill one another and more likely to kill themselves, Twinge said. The suicide rate among 12 to 14-year-old girls has tripled since 2010, while it is 27% higher in that period for boys. Signs of depression in girls also increased at a faster rate, rising 50% between 2012 and 2015, while boys' symptoms increased by 21%. Extended self. If accidentally leaving your phone at home makes you turn the car around without thinking twice, it may be because you see your device as an extension of yourself, a South Korean study found. When we take and retain memories with objects, in this case using our phones to take pictures and videos and talk to people we care about, the objects become almost a part of us, the study found. People who viewed their phones as extended self experienced more distress when separated from their devices than those who didn't, New York Magazine's Science of Us reported. And finally, in the tech era comes the heading Tinder Moods. That's T-I-N-D-E-R. A new study found that both men and women who used the dating app Tinder experienced more low self-esteem, body image issues, and bad moods than their peers who didn't use the app. The research, conducted by Jessica Struble, an assistant professor at the University of Rhode Island, studied more than 700 college-age Tinder users. Tinder relies primarily on photos to match people. About 17% of the group used the app. Compared to their peers, they were more likely to feel pressure to look a certain way and experience bad moods, Live Science reported. Both men and women had similar negative responses. And now some news for everybody that likes the Outer Banks. This article comes as the heading, Now That the Power's On, Outer Banks Businesses Add Up the Damage. A week after a construction crew accidentally severed two of the three cables powering Hatteras and Ocracoke Islands, power is finally restored. The evacuation order has been lifted, and that means, for the first time since last Thursday, visitors can return to the islands starting Friday at noon. Electricity conservation appeals have also been lifted. It's good news for seasonal businesses who count on 12 weeks of summer tourist traffic to fund their entire year. Chris Noble, Economic Development Director for Hyde County, says many businesses tell her the week they lost is one of the busiest, if not the busiest, of their entire year. We're really hoping that we get our legs underneath us quickly, she said. It will take a while to reach the momentum we were at when we had to evacuate, but we have our fingers crossed. We're at a place right now where it's just so hard for us to know what our actual losses are. It's just so substantial. Noble says a restaurant owner told her that the past 10 days represent a 10% loss of his yearly revenue. Individual losses vary. But I know they're tremendous, she said. A community meeting is planned for Friday to more concretely assess the damage, she noted. PCL Civil Contractors, the construction company that's admitted fault for the error, put out a statement late Thursday thanking officials and utility companies for their support and tireless team effort in restoring power. PCL understands the inconvenience caused by the outage, the statement read. We're working to provide assistance to those affected, and more information will be available shortly. The company, which had been working on the Bonner Bridge project when the accident occurred, also thanked residents and businesses for what it referred to as an outpouring of support. PCL prides itself on being an employer of choice, a committed community member, and a respected builder, the statement read. Cape Hatteras Electric Cooperative and contracted workers completed the construction of a new overhead transmission line near Oregon Inlet and have energized the cable, the utility explained in a statement Thursday. A lawsuit on behalf of a handful of businesses impacted was filed earlier this week, naming PCL as defendant. Now this article about Channel Advisor. Channel Advisor is expanding its global operations again. Months after opening an engineering office in Madrid, Spain, to expand its global research and development, Morrisville-based Channel Advisor is planning moves in Japan. On a call with analysts late Thursday, CEO David Spitz said Channel Advisor will have a presence in Japan in 2018 and is investing further in its existing China operation. We believe we've only scratched the surface in Asia, he says. Initially, the Japanese office will serve the export market, just as we have in China, he explains. Business in China grew by the fastest rate in over a year in the quarter, he says. Success in China gives it natural advantages as it expands to Japan, Spitz predicts. He says the firm estimates $9 billion in export gross merchandise volume in Japan could be accessible to Channel Advisor. And Japan isn't the only Channel Advisor outfit that will be hiring. The company increased its headcount 9% year over year, according to securities filings. And it plans to keep investing in the headcount, particularly in the sales arena, company executives said Thursday. In addition to its Morrisville headquarters, Channel Advisor has a presence in England, Ireland, Germany, Australia, Brazil, China, and Spain. Overall, Channel Advisor reported revenue of $30 million, an increase of 11% over last year. The company ended the quarter with 2,906 customers, not including the 50 it acquired with the recent acquisition of HubLogix Commerce Corp. Spitz said the sales team had its strongest performance in 2 years. Channel Advisor, whose New York symbol ticker symbol is ECOM, opened Friday session on Wall Street around $10 a share. And now other news from the Triangle. Triangle CRO launches the new consulting arm. Morrisville-based contract research organization Clinipace Worldwide has launched a new consultancy aimed at providing customer services in the regulatory and strategic development space. Clinipace, RSD Global Consulting, consists of more than 50 specialists, the company announced Thursday. The move comes at a time when CROs are looking for consolidation and differentiation to pick up market share. The new consultancy was launched as a result of customer demand, said Clinipace President and CEO Jeff Williams in prepared remarks. We can work with companies of all sizes, from early-stage biotech firms through to clinical stage and multinational, he added, from traditional small molecules to advanced biologics, across the complete array of dosage forms and a wide range of therapeutic areas. We can help customers plan and advance their programs into the clinic to regulatory approval and beyond. Williams founded Clinipace back in 2003. According to the company, it's completed upward of 1,500 clinical trials and 1,500 consulting projects to date and has operations in North America, South America, Europe, and Asia. Its global headquarters is located in Morrisville. In July of last year, Clinipace raised $3.7 million in its latest round of financing. Now in news of airlines comes the article, American Airlines employees file lawsuit against the uniform vendor Twin Hill. The American Airlines uniform crisis has taken a new and decidedly more litigious turn. The Chicago-based Siprit law firm filed a class action lawsuit in federal court in Chicago late Wednesday. Two American Airlines flight attendants, Thor Zurbriggen and Dina Catton, are named in the suit as plaintiffs on behalf of fellow AA employees, and Twin Hill is named as the defendant. Dina Catton is the wife of Joe Catton, an AA pilot, who famously stood up at a March AA crew meeting, presided over by AA President Robert Isom. Joe Catton talked at that meeting of how he did not have a safe environment in the cockpit after he experienced serious symptomatic reactions to the new Twin Hill uniform. Twin Hill, a unit of Men's Warehouse, which is a division of Tailored Brands, the New York stock symbol is TLRD, supplied new uniforms to more than 70,000 American Airlines flight attendants last September. Since then, well over 5,000 American Airlines flight attendants, pilots, gate agents, and customer service representatives have reported symptomatic reactions to the new uniforms, ranging from rashes and hives to headaches and severe respiratory issues. AA CEO Doug Parker called it one of the biggest conundrums he has ever grappled with in his career in the airline industry. The situation reached a turning point in June when American Airlines announced it would end its contract with Twin Hill and start the multi-year process of finding a new uniform supplier to design and roll out new uniforms. However, AA also said in June that employees would have to continue to wear the Twin Hill uniforms or one of several other options made available until the larger uniform replacement project is done. Flight attendants in particular were concerned in the wake of that announcement that many employees would still be susceptible to symptomatic reactions for potentially months or years to come. The lawsuit filed Wednesday is seeking more urgent action. Among other things, the suit asked the court to enjoin Twin Hill from selling the controversial uniforms and to recall all the uniforms that AA employees have been wearing since last September. The lawsuit also asked the court to order Twin Hill to establish a medical monitoring fund to pay for medical monitoring of American Airlines employees exposed to the controversial uniforms. The lawsuit also asked the court to award Zurbriggen and Catton individual damages to be determined at trial. The body of the lawsuit includes significant detail about the uniform crisis as it unfolded over 9 months. Among other things, the lawsuit lists some of the many chemicals that were found in the fabric during testing of the Twin Hill uniforms, but then goes on to state, "It is myopic to focus on any one chemical as the purported cause of any symptoms or particular symptoms, as two or more chemicals may synergistically contribute to a particular health effect, or there may be some other cause altogether." Then the suit states, "One conclusion is clear, however. The new uniforms are causing these health problems. That's the only possible conclusion, given that the thousands of American Airlines flight attendants and pilots began reporting serious adverse reactions only after the new uniforms were introduced." Siprit attorney Stuart Weltman declined comment about the lawsuit when contacted. He said the lawsuit should speak for itself. As for comment on the lawsuit, Twin Hill said, "Nothing in the complaint filed by two American Airlines flight attendants changes the fact that there is absolutely no evidence linking any of the symptoms alleged to our uniforms. We continue to believe that any lawsuit filed on the basis of the safety of the American uniforms is without merit, and we intend to contest this action vigorously." The Siprit Law Shop is a small but high-powered firm founded by Joseph Siprit. In 2012, the firm successfully settled a class action lawsuit against Southwest Airlines, the stock symbol ticker is LUV, related to liquor vouchers that the low-fare carrier was refusing to honor. Meanwhile, another group of AA flight attendants based on the West Coast is believed to be preparing to file a lawsuit against Twin Hill. Details of that effort were not immediately available. Now in news from stocks. Stock surge on Wall Street pushes these 25 S&P 500 stocks to record highs. Investors have been heavily focused on the Dow 22,000 milestone. But while the Dow Jones Industrial Average is surging, investors have also been pushing up prices for stocks on the larger market. In fact, 25 of the S&P 500 stocks have recently hit record highs on Wall Street, representing companies from a variety of industries. Philadelphia-based chemicals company FMC Corp. led the group of 25 stocks that are in the Standard & Poor's 500 Index that recently hit all-time highs, posting a gain of more than 8% on Wednesday after it posted earnings that beat estimates and landed at national praise from Jim Cramer on CNBC. FMC closed at $83.85 a share on Wednesday. Among other stocks that hit all-time highs and drove big gains on Wednesday was tech giant Apple Incorporated, NASDAQ symbol AAPL, which was up nearly 5% on Wednesday to close at $157.14 per share. Apple also got a boost today when MarketWatch reported that analyst Nigam Arora predicted Apple stock could double on its artificial intelligence efforts. Ametek Inc., the symbol is AME, an industrial goods manufacturer based near Philadelphia, also posted a gain of more than 4% on Wednesday, closing at $64.23 a share. Insurance stocks have been posting gains of late, with Northbrook, Illinois-based Allstate Corp., ticker symbol ALL, posting a 3.5% gain Wednesday, closing at $94.16 per share after it said this week its second quarter earnings topped Wall Street expectations. Allstate also got a boost when Barron's reported that one analyst boosted their price target on Allstate to $110 a share. Bob Russell, president of Russell Total Wealth Management in Fairburn, Ohio, and a frequent guest on CNBC and Fox Business, recently told the Dayton Business Journal that the S&P's broader market, which is comprised of small-cap U.S.-based companies, likely has the most upside for stocks going forward due to the heavy emphasis from D.C. on small businesses, tax-friendly policies, and softer regulation. The biggest threats to the current bull market are geopolitical, for example, North Korea and political scandals, and a failure to revise and reduce tax rates for U.S. businesses. Russell predicted at the beginning of the summer, barring these thoughts, the U.S. stock markets will likely take a breather during the summer and then climb higher throughout the remainder of the year, with a yearly return in the 9% to 13% range. Stocks also surged this year on the S&P 500 include defense firms such as Raytheon Corp, stocker symbol RTN, up 24% this year, Lockheed Martin Corp, ticker symbol LMT, up 19% this year, and Northrop Grumman Corporation, the ticker symbol is NOC, which is up 16% this year. Among the 25 record stocks that have large Dayton area operations are health insurer United Health Group, that's ticker symbol UNH, which has a large presence in Westchester and is up 22% this year so far. Of the Dayton-based stocks, none made the list of 25, but some have seen big gains this year, including Terra Data Corp, ticker symbol TDC. The Miami Township-based tech company is up 17% year-to-date, with Teradata stock closing at $32.35 a share on Wednesday. Also, Westchester-based drug company Atricure Inc., ticker symbol ATRC, is up 18% on the year, with Atricure closing at $22.78 per share on Wednesday. And now news of local interest. IBM sells land near RTP. Developer planning $60 million industrial park. IBM has sold a tract of nearly 102 acres of wooded, undeveloped land near its campus in Research Triangle Park, and the new owner of the site is making immediate plans to break ground on the first phase of buildings for a new $60 million industrial park. Rich Horn, president of Indianapolis-based Strategic Capital Partners, says he and his partners have been working for more than a year with IBM and Durham City officials to secure the entitlements needed to construct up to 1 million square feet of new industrial warehouse space, a project they're calling Patriot Park. Phase 1 will include two buildings with a total of 322,800 square feet of space that's expected to break ground soon and with completion by the second quarter of 2018. The new business park will be near the intersection of Miami Boulevard and Patriot Drive in Durham and is surrounded on all sides by either Cree's headquarters to the south, Toshiba Global Commerce Solutions to the west, TBC Industrial Park and GE Aviation's Durham Manufacturing Plant to the north, and tributaries of Stirrup Iron Creek to the west. There were a lot of issues with this site, Horn admits. There were road and site cost issues, infrastructure, and utility issues. But the seller gave us time to work through those issues, and we're very excited about it. Within a mile of the Patriot Park site, two more industrial parks are under construction, and over the past 2 years have added 8 new warehouse buildings, with a combined 990,000 square feet of new distribution, storage, and manufacturing space to the region's RTP Interstate 40 submarket. Nearly all of the new buildings at Liberty Ridge and TBC Industrial have either sold to new industries coming into the market, like the India-based pharmaceutical firm Lifestar Pharma, or openly fully leased. Power Secure, Peter Miller, and M-Plus are among the major tenants expanding into new warehouses at Liberty Ridge and TBC Industrial. The vacancy rate for the RTP I-40 submarket's warehouse sector was under 6% in the second quarter, according to Triangle Business Journal's quarterly space survey. Generally speaking, the lion's share of the interest in industrial space in the region is in the areas around the airport and RTP, and those areas of land for new development are diminishing, Horn says. This is one of the last pieces. At Patriot Drive, Strategic Capital Partners paid IBM $3.8 million, or about $37,400 per acre, according to Durham County deed records. Other partners in the deal include Westminster Capital and Berkshire Group, with First Tennessee Bank providing construction financing. Future phases will build out the remaining 81 acres for a total estimated investment of nearly $60 million, Horn says. IBM was represented by Barry Bowling of CBRE Raleigh in the sale of the property, and Foundry Commercial will be in charge of leasing Patriot Park's new industrial space. The construction team also includes Paul Woody Architecture on the designs and DC Insight LLC as a construction management firm. And news from the cosmetics world, here's how Avon products can get back on track. With Sherry McCoy planning to step down as CEO in March of next year, observers are wondering what the cosmetics maker can do to get back on track and what kind of leader it should look for going forward. Neil Goldman, founder and chairman of Relationship Science, believes whoever takes over will have to have a certain degree of tech and e-commerce savvy. All companies need to become tech companies if they want to survive today, he told me. I would imagine they will look for someone who has extensive online experience, particularly with social media. The unique selling component of the company needs to be modernized in its approach. Kathy Gersh, a former Nordstrom executive, shares a similar sentiment. Shopping habits are changing, she explained. To succeed, Avon, the stock symbol ticker is AVP, must evolve. In recent years, Avon has grown its business largely through expansion to markets where technology infrastructure was less developed and the direct sales model faced less competition from e-commerce, said Gersh, current EVP of Strategy Execution and change management firm Cotter International. But as growth in these markets slowed and technology began to catch up, revenue inevitably declines. The New York-based company must transition its representative network from a distribution channel to an influencer model, one where new processes and tools help convert relevant influencer marketing efforts into actual sales, she added. By seizing the opportunity to leverage personal recommendations, which remain highly relevant in today's e-commerce environment, Avon could work to ultimately be able to shift its brand perception from old and tired to modern and fresh, she said. That might be difficult to do, Goldman said. Technology and related consumer habits are creating a fast-changing market environment, he said. If a company isn't agile, its approach is going to become quickly outdated. As a 100-year-old company, I would imagine it's hard to shake tradition and embrace the rapidly evolving new. Whether a private equity firm or larger competitor is likely to buy Avon remains to be seen. Recall the high-profile effort on the part of New York-based fragrance company Coty Incorporated to take over Avon back in 2012. Coty wanted to pay $10.7 billion for a struggling rival, but eventually withdrew the offer. I would imagine they will try to inject some online pizzazz and traction prior to trying to sell it, Goldman said. It's hard to let go of the perceived value potential that is indicated by the reported $10 billion bid Coty made a few years ago. This article is written by Anthony Noto, who's a multimedia journalist focused on venture capital and Silicon Valley startups. Now the article, Law Schools Broaden Training Programs. Many law schools are offering training programs in areas outside of the legal field as more graduates take jobs that don't require a law degree. Many law schools are giving different approaches, according to the Bloomberg Big Law Business reported. Schools such as Suffolk University Law School and Northwestern Pritzker School of Law are embracing the term JD Advantage, according to Big Law Business, which refers to jobs that don't require a law degree, but having one would be advantageous. Such jobs include compliance officers, paralegals, consultants, and journalists, per Big Law Business. The percentage of law school graduates who take JD Advantage jobs has steadily increased, rising from 8% to 14% since 2007, according to Big Law Business. In a new addition, the law firm Morgan Lewis has hired finance lawyer Marjorie Kreider as partner in its business office, per a news release. Kreider has a background in asset-based lending transactions with an emphasis in lending in the retail industry. Kreider also advises lenders in connection with acquisition financing, leverage buyouts, and debtor-in-possession financing transactions, per the release. And finally, here's news of an auction. The TGI Fridays restaurant on Irwin Road across from Duke University Medical Center in Durham is closed, and an auction company has been hired to liquidate all of its furniture, fixtures, and equipment. All starting prices for the restaurant items, big and small, are just a dollar with no set reserve price, according to Max Wipperman with Restaurant Equipment Bid. Depending on how competitive the auction gets, winning bidders could walk away with professional-grade kitchen equipment for pennies on the dollar. The restaurant officially closed July 24. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Alton Banks, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Once again, that's 919-832-5138.